Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking with Jeffrey Martin and Mick Flannery. Jeffrey is a singer-songwriter who lives in Portland, Oregon, and Mick is a singer-songwriter from Ireland. While they both have, you know, their unique stories, they also have a whole lot in common and are good friends. It was fun getting to sit down with these two while they were on tour recently. We touch on many things, including their friendship, Steinbeck, and in addition to beer, what helps them get through rough patches. And as always, we get to hear their favorite albums, books, places, and memories. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy!
What I don't know to, yeah.
Well, thank you guys for doing this and for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Well, I always like to start very simply. If you could each just introduce yourselves and for anyone who doesn't already know who you are, just say, you know, what you do and also anything you want to tell me about yourself.
Mick, you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Mick Flannery. I'm a singer-songwriter from the south of Ireland, a place called Blarney in County Cork. And I'm here on at the back end of a tour of 3 weeks of the West Coast. Jeffrey was kind enough to bring me along.
I'm Jeffrey Martin. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I've been there for 8 years now, I think, but in the Northwest for a long time. I'll just be touring forever, I think.
I hope you are.
Me too.
It's good.
Till you're dead.
Yeah, till I'm dead. Something that's not in my bio, I don't know what is currently in my bio. But I had a circuitous, is that a word?
Yes.
Route to music. I loved it long before I knew I loved it, I think, and just kind of haven't been touring really until the last maybe 4 or 5 years. Been doing everything else before that to pay the bills. So I decided to stop paying the bills and just tour.
What was the moment that you realized you had that eureka moment and you're like, oh, I actually really want to do this?
It was the moment that I felt like I fully stepped into adulthood because I took a full-time job as a teacher and I loved it, but it was all of a sudden I had health insurance and retirement, and like it just felt very adult in a good way, but also I realized, I don't know, I had this heavy feeling that I could see the next 35 years of life all of a sudden, and I didn't like that feeling, and it didn't leave enough energy at the end of the day to do as much music as I wanted to do. So it was weird. I think the day I started teaching full time was the day I decided I couldn't teach full time. It took me a couple of years to make that decision out loud, but yeah.
Sometimes it takes a while. It's not overnight, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Mick? What was your path?
I had kind of a musical family on my mother's side. There was a lot of sing-song sessions after nights at a bar in Killarney, where a guitar would be passed around and everybody mostly could sing something or do something. And I just kind of wanted to be a part of it, I guess. So I started to learn the guitar and various covers of Bob Dylan and Tom Waits, which they were all into. My family were all into more American music than they were Irish music.
Damn right.
And I just kept going. I kept getting kind of like nice encouragement, I guess, from aunts and mostly family, because I was too afraid to admit to my friends that I was playing music because it wasn't cool. Mm. I gave up piano lessons because it wasn't cool. I don't know, later, like, I was working as a stonemason, like a construction job, but I was tipping away doing gigs as well at the same time. And I think maybe it was when I decided to do a course in the music industry. Like, instead of going to college, I went to this course, and my parents asked me what I was doing. I said, I think I might like to do music. And they said, all right, you're probably going to be poor then for some time. Are you okay with that? And I said, I think so. And then that was it.
Did you have like a similar feeling that you were doing something that you weren't really like meant to be doing?
I didn't mind the construction job that much. It didn't scare me that might be my life. Even though it got cold in the winter times doing it, and it was a little bit difficult to... But it wasn't at the time in Ireland. People in the construction industry weren't complaining because it was ramping. This economic ramp was going up at the time. So it didn't seem like a bad route, and still doesn't really, but it's definitely not as interesting as this life.
Yeah. So you felt the difference when you were making music, like in your body, you were like, okay, this feels better or feels good.
Well, I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, I still miss physical work.
Yeah.
Speaking of the body, mm-hmm. I miss being physically tired properly at the end of the day, as opposed to physically drunk. And
that's very true.
Yeah, you know, because it's a very different life.
Sure.
Your hours are different. Your chemistry of it is different. After doing a gig, you get an adrenaline push and you can't go to sleep. So you feel as though I have to drink 4 or 5 beers.
Well, I ask this to a lot of artists because, you know, so many of my friends are artists or musicians, and I know very well the post-tour depression feeling, you know, and I'm wondering if like that touches your lives at all.
It is for me. I think when I set out on tour at first, I don't have it in my head that how I do on that tour has any bearing on my sense of like self-worth. You know, I'm just setting out on a tour, and it's fine. And if it goes great, that's great. And if not, then there'll be other tours. But I think by the time I get home, that has crept in to me. Like maybe it is that like little adrenaline rush every night after night in a new place and meeting new people. And then that stops as abruptly as it started.
Yeah.
It's not like I don't lay awake at night like craving the applause of the 7 people that came to my show in Bozeman, Montana or something. But like it is a strange transition to go from the complete freedom and like anonymity of touring to snapped back into your life where you know, you call your parents and your siblings and your friends and you say, I'm back in town and let's hang out. And yeah, there's a couple of days always of post-tour depression.
I kind of like coming home for the first few days. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Kind of sleep. I don't know. After that, as a musician in general, I tend to feel a bit useless if I'm not doing something. I feel like I'm not good for the world. I feel like I'm getting away with something.
Mm.
Maybe because there's nothing tangible. There's nothing that anyone can... It's like this perceived emotional benefit that some stranger is receiving. But even that is kind of... It's a reach, you know? So when I'm home and I'm not, say, touring... If touring is like... It feels like some degree of work because you have to travel every day and you feel like at least you're doing something. I wish I could do just a couple of days construction work. But if someone could hire me for a couple of days when I'm back.
Yeah.
Totally. I had like a magical year this year for that. Like I was working on a house in Portland and like I'd come back from tour and I had such small windows of time to do work on this house that I had just had to do, even if I wanted the next day just to sleep and whatever. I don't know. It was great.
I never asked you this before, but what do you do with your... Because you and Anna both have dogs.
Yeah.
What happens when you guys are on tour?
They just starve. We just leave a bowl of food and wish them well. No, we have a lot of friends in Portland that are awesomely helpful with that stuff. We have a lot of scuzzy friends that are bouncing from couch to couch to couch all the time, and they're stoked to have an opportunity to come stay and hang out with some good dogs when we're gone.
So the dogs have a big extended family, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
awesome. Well,
we sort of touched on this, but could you each tell me maybe something other than music that you can get lost in?
Yeah, stonework was good for that because it wasn't too monotonous. Yeah. Each job was kind of different to another job. And I guess there's something artistic about it. You have to make choices every stone. I was reluctant to say that because it sounds stupid.
No, you do.
Yeah.
Every stone is different, you know. You've got. There's this, you can have a good sense of pride about it.
Yeah.
And there's a nice feeling, like, because Ireland is so small, and I get to drive by the jobs I've done every now and again, and just because they're just on thoroughfares, main thoroughfares, and just get to say, oh, look, it's still standing.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You can actually see it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I carve out some time every year, every once in a while, to get out into the woods with some good friends. And I have some good friends that I grew up with who are not at all, like, they just don't give a shit about my music in the best way. They're not mean about it, but it just doesn't, they just don't care that I'm, like, they just want to go have a good time. And
there has to be something kind of like special on that when it's like, they, you know, that they just like you for you and it's not about this persona, or not persona, but like another part of you, you know, it it's like good. You.
Yeah. And when we're out camping or whatever, fishing or something, there's no talk about what I'm working on, or like there's some on within the world of music, there's some, like, so many people that you meet on the road or whatever, they tend to be musicians, or the conversations that you're having are always like, what are you working on? Are you going, you know, on tour soon or whatever? And it's fine, but it's so refreshing just to talk about something that's not musical.
Totally.
At all.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's lovely. And Mick, how about you? Who's like somebody in your life that is like that for you? That's not related to music necessarily, but.
All of my friends are non-music people, really. It's like Jeffrey said, it's not that I dislike the company of musicians as a rule. It's just, I just need a break.
Totally.
Just to talk about any old thing, or just talk about nothing at all.
Yeah.
The only reason that my friends would bring up music or the music business is to tear my life apart and make me feel like a piece of shit, which I really enjoy because I get to do it to them then as well.
Sounds like some good friends. Yeah. Well, how about, could you guys each tell me who is somebody whose creativity moves you? And it doesn't have to be in music. It could be in any space.
I like the Coen Brothers movies. Mm-hmm. I like the way they put things together. And I think we both like Cormac McCarthy's novels.
Yeah.
I'm taking all your answers here before you get to them.
It's good you know him well.
I've been reading a lot of Steinbeck in the last couple of years and really regretting putting it off that long.
Yeah.
Like, he has like a way of writing that's very accessible, even though it's incredibly deep and layered. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like pompous or esoteric. It's just like, I don't know. And if I find it really, it like turns a different part of my head that it doesn't get turned by anything else, I feel like. And I, especially his stories about the way people live, and especially like people that are struggling with money or whatever. I just, I don't know. Yeah. It lately I just feel like it grounds me because I get trapped in my own narratives that happen in my head about stories and things I want to write about and whatever. And every time it can even be the same book. Like, I can just go to Grapes of Wrath and read it over and over and over again. And every time it's just like, I don't know. I'm surprised at his ability to see things in some way that I never, ever would see it in.
I sent Anna, if you haven't read it already, look through it. I sent her.
I saw it. I'm so stoked. Yeah.
You got to steal it.
I used to, actually, when I was teaching, I used to use a few of his letters.
Yeah.
And they're, the one especially to his, there were a few to his, one of his sons about, like, encouraging his son to do what he wants in college and to use his time well. And, like, they're beautiful.
They're so beautiful. Yeah. I always, so Mick, so you know what I'm talking about, I was telling Anna about this letter that Steinbeck wrote to his son when he was, his son was falling in love for the first time. And there's this, like, the end of it is so, like, simple, but profound and beautiful. And it's, he's telling him, he says, you know, don't worry about, what does he say? Don't worry about hurrying, nothing good gets away. And I just love that, and not just in romance, but in all matters of life, you know, just remembering that nothing good gets away. So not to feel like you have to force things or rush things. Anyways, yeah, he's a beautiful writer.
He's so, I mean, I don't know if he ever intended for those letters to be out in the world like that, but he's so like tender at moments.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Totally. Oh yeah. And it's the amazing thing about books and writing is just, or reading, you know, is like how you can be, like you're mentioning, transported to somewhere outside of your own head, you know, or feel like you've just found a new friend, you know. That's really cool. Well, one thing that's a little bit unique about this interview is that you two are friends and have been on tour together. And I would love to ask each of you to maybe tell me something special about the other person. Like, you know, you do like when you're little kids and... Or something you admire or are inspired by the other person.
God damn it.
Well, putting you on the spot.
I found out the other night that Mick is easily scared by things. granted, it was a very creepy situation. It was nice, but it was like two creepy cabins up in the hills in like in Boulder Creek area. In the morning, Mick told me he woke up. Someone had written the word frost on his window.
Oh.
And it
and it wasn't Jeffrey?
And it wasn't there. It wasn't me. And it wasn't there when he went to bed and he freaked out.
Uh-oh. I would have been freaked out.
It was really, yeah. It was really great. But on a serious note, I really don't. Like, I could count easily on one hand people I've spent more than a week with on the road. And I really don't. It's not, I love a lot of people in Portland, and there's a lot of people, a lot of friends even, that I would not spend a week with on the road because it exhausts me. And I think Mick, maybe you disagree, or I don't know, but I think we have very similar energies in the car, which is important. If someone's needing to like fill every space with the shit that's coming through their mind, it's like, I just want to murder them, you know, yeah. I don't feel that way with you, Mick. I don't want to murder you yet.
Yeah. I think that's about as good as it gets, really, with two people in a car for 3 weeks.
That you don't want to murder them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah. You're pretty big, too. I don't know how I'd, you know. Yeah. I kind of sized you up once or twice. How am I going to kill this fucker?
And that's a true friend, I think, the ones that you can have silence with, you know, That's great.
I can't believe you prefaced that with, I'm easily scared. Someone came to the window in the middle of the night and wrote on the window.
Yeah, but you created that all in your mind.
How
really
do you
what
know
happened
that,
was that someone
and the door
written...
was open. And the door, or at least I thought, when I went back to the door, the thing had been, like, changed from when I had gone in there first.
That is creepy.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure it had been changed.
I was... they left... when it happened, I laid down... I tried to lay back to sleep because I didn't want to go in and cry to Jeffrey in his cabin and go, oh, the boogeyman is here. You come. And like... But I laid down to try to go back to sleep, thinking about who was outside writing frost on the window. And I said, you know, this is karma, because I've been an asshole to people in the past. Like, I had a long time ago, I was with my girlfriend. We were staying in her house, and it was a stormy night. And I got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And something happened out downstairs. There was something hit off the front door, and but it was just a storm.
Yeah.
And I went back to the bed, and she said, "Mick, did you hear that noise downstairs?" And immediately my brain went into evil mode, and she just goes. So I stayed silent, and She goes, Mick, did you hear the noise? I said, nothing. And she goes, Mick. And I just said, who's Mick?
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, so I deserve Frost, man.
That's what happened. Yep, karma. Yep.
You probably deserve a little more than Frost, man. But...
Oh, man. It's like our dad has done so many things like that. In his, I mean, yeah, I don't even, like,
what, it's funny. What? I mean, she got up out of the bed and started beating the shit out of me. Yeah. It was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been happy either. Yeah. Anyways, it just started making me think of all these stories of my dad when he was younger. But anyways, I wanted to ask you, kind of off topic, but I heard you, or I read that you have a musical. Or it's like, what is that?
It's a sad musical based on the first album I made, which was like a concept album. I had a little thread going through it. And a lady from Ireland wrote a screenplay to it.
That's awesome.
I guess it's called a screen, or a stage adaptation. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of other people had to do a lot of work that I didn't do to get this to where it is. So it's really good. I'm inclined to say it's exciting, which I don't often say. But.
Well, it's awesome. Is it just in Ireland or
just in Ireland
to start?
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It's not. It's a bit alternative for a musical. It's not very jazz hands.
Yeah.
It's
not yet.
Yeah. It's pretty. There's not a lot of joyous peaks. Mm. So we'll see.
Well, sometimes it's just what you need, you know, to have, I don't know, have something that's sort of melancholy and sad and makes you feel better in its way.
Yeah.
So one thing I ask everybody on the podcast is when you're having a bad day or a month or year, what's in your personal toolkit to help you get through it?
Well, I've started to use some meditation apps for 10 or 15 minutes a day. And that helps me to, you know, the phrases they use in those philosophies is respond and not react and recognize your emotions for what they are and at the time that they're happening, which kind of cuts the life of that emotional period in half. If you can just recognize, oh, I'm feeling pretty shitty about myself today. Look at that.
Yeah.
Those things are good.
Yeah.
To distance yourself from your emotions is useful, I think.
Totally.
Unintentionally, I feel like every once in a while, I grab a beer with my dad. He lives a couple hours south of me, and we catch up and. My dad loves to talk, and he loves to pry in a good way. Yeah. And I kind of know if I'm going to go get a beer with dad that he's not going to leave any stones unturned. Mm-hmm. And I do it like kind of to myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go get a beer with dad because I need to get
stones
turned. Yeah, stones turned. And I always, I don't know, that does things. I always feel kind of regrounded, you know, just saying shit out loud
Totally.
Is really, I don't know,
sort of like unpack it when maybe you didn't even know, like,
I mean, nothing gets solved, it's just to talk about it,
You
know, is the solution
that can be healing for sure,
And
it's like sometimes when you feel like a sort of heaviness or sadness and you don't even know really what it is, and sometimes that's what you need is to talk with somebody that you know just sees you and really gets you, and just to like unpack all the layers, and then you, like you said, you know, maybe don't solve all the issues, but you can at least put it out there and get
and
it out
have
of your head.
Beer
and you beer,
know, so that's always the first step to solving any issue.
Okay, so thank you for those answers. Almost lastly, I want to ask, since you have been on tour together for a little bit and you've done this before together, can you share like a memorable concert experience? Anything comes to mind?
I don't know. I the first time that Mick and I played together, I went over to Ireland to open shows for him over there, and it's not like an event that's memorable to me, but you figure out when you play shows with somebody else, especially in the context of you going to their territory, yeah. kind of, you instantly figure out if someone is doing this as a job with a massive amount of ego, mm-hmm. or if they're not doing it for that.
That might be the reason, because you're kind of similar. You just don't take this thing too seriously.
Yeah.
Which makes the gigs kind of, they're more relaxed affairs rather than anything can happen. Fireworks are going to go off and it's going to be crowd surfing. Which I like, you know. So I don't know. I mean, the last night was funky to me because we played in this odd...
Yeah, that's funky.
Venue that's shaped like a snail.
Yeah. Oh, in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
I haven't been there, but I've heard of this.
Yeah.
We don't have snail houses in Ireland.
We don't have snail houses except that one.
That's the unique situation.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So I like to end the podcast by asking some of your favorite things. So I'll like say the thing and then you can tell me what comes to mind. So how about a favorite album or song?
Album or favorite album? I think my favorite album is The Ghost of Tom Joad, which is based on the John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
A Grapes of Wrath book.
I'll say it's, one of my favorite songs is That's the Night That the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Hmm.
By Reba McEntire.
Good.
I'll say that, or do you mean it?
I really do mean it. Right. I do. Which, yeah, I mean it.
How about a favorite book?
A really great, skinny, easy to read book. You can open up anywhere in it and find something good is Annie Dillard's The Writing Life.
Mm.
That's a book that saves me often. It's like awesome. A good one.
I haven't read that, but I've heard of it.
Yeah,
it's great.
I really like No Country for Old Men.
Mm. How about a favorite place?
Cork City is one of my favorite places. That's the nearest city to where I'm from.
What's special about it to you?
I guess it's kind of got to do with family, really. I get to knock around with my brothers, which I don't often get to do because I live in Clare now.
I love Portland. I just love the feeling of coming back. No matter where I've been on tour, coming home always feels better than where I've been, and that's a good thing to feel.
That definitely tells you you're in the right place.
Yeah. I also hate Portland sometimes.
It's a love hate.
I love it when I come home too.
Yeah. Okay. So lastly, how about a favorite memory?
I have this odd memory of, it pops into my head every now and again. When I was about 13, I woke up and all I had to do was work on my treehouse. Mm. I had a weird feeling. I think it was because I was 13. And I was starting to realize that life was going to be kind of shit, in parts at least.
Yeah.
And that I might look back at a day when I was only going to worry about a treehouse as a pretty good day.
That's really profound. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't like that's interesting to think about. Like
I might have been older than 13. I might have been like 24 or something.
I might have been working on the treehouse I'm currently working on.
But it's true. It's like funny when we're younger, though. I mean, seriously, though, like we don't think about how big and complicated life is, you know? And even though, I don't know if you guys were like this, but I feel like all artists in some way, like even for me when I was younger, I felt like there was a lot of like overthinking and depth and like sadness in me, you know?
Yeah.
Even if I was just 12 and, you know, that's just super interesting. I've never heard something like that before. It's really, well, let's stick with 13. I like that imagery. 13 in the treehouse, that's cool.
One of the first big tours I ever did alone, I booked a month and a half of tours or shows out through, like from Portland up through like Montana and the Dakotas and then down into Colorado and back through the South. And I brought my dog. I used to have this dog, this yellow lab, and I brought him on the whole tour. And while I was on that tour, my grandpa was sick with Alzheimer's, and it was kind of touch and go while I was out. And a lot of bad things happened on that tour, like a lot of car trouble. And in Colorado, I hit a bighorn sheep jumped onto the road, and I hit it with my car, and my dog freaked out because we got in this loud accident. It was fine, but the car was totaled, and it still drove, but the hood was like roped onto the top of the car, and it was, we limped it back home. And I drove, right when I got back home, I drove up to Spokane to my grandpa's to see him for a couple of days. And there was, just looking back, there was like so much that went wrong on this tour. And it was at a time when I was like losing my grandpa. And on that drive up to Spokane to see him, the rope that was holding the hood of the car on broke, and the hood flew off and took off into the air. Just wow. Like this like deadly piece of metal flying. And I never got it. It's gone. But I still, when I was finally back home and all done, it was a very, in my mind at the time, it was like that was a completely successful tour. And I played for like beer and chicken wings for a month and a half and tips, you know. It was like, I like thinking about that now when I get bummed about a show that didn't go how I wanted it to go, or like where I'm like trying to book a tour and it's frustrating or something. I like thinking back to what used to like be plenty of good to feel like a success. And like, I don't know, I like that one.
Thanks, Jeffrey. That was beautiful too. Well, this was a lot of fun. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Musings with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Aaron Mooring, and the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.